Coming up on Tech News Today, what Apple's iWatch trademark registration means. Not exactly what you think we might think it means. Also, the first Firefox OS phone arrives, and HP wants back in the smartphone biz, or do they? All that and more coming up.
Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is Twit.
Bandwidth for Tech News Today is provided by CashFly at CACHEFLY.com.
This is Tech News Today for Monday, Canada Day, July 1st, 2013. Tech News Today is brought to you by ProXPN. ProXPN is a virtual private network that allows you to use the internet the way it should be, anonymously and without oversight. 20% off your new account. Go to proxpn.com/twit and use the code TNT. Welcome to Tech News Today. I'm Tom Merritt.
I'm Sarah Lane.
I'm Aya Zachter.
And I'm Jason Howell.
I'm sorry, Jason.
That's okay.
How many times? 786 times we've done this?
It's okay. That's maybe five times you've ever messed that up, so it's all right.
Well, it's Canada Day, so everybody's off.
I'm just so excited about Canada Day.
Start the month off right with a cutting off Jason.
He's the politest person I could find, closest to a Canadian. Let's do the top 10 stories of the day in the news views. Finish it. Bloomberg reports Apple has trademarked the name iWatch in Japan. The trademark was filed June 3rd and made public last week. It covers products, including a handheld computer or watch device. A Russian newspaper reported the iWatch name was trademarked in Russia last month.
Back during Mobile World Congress, a bunch of carriers showed support for Mozilla's HTML5 open web mobile platform, Firefox OS. Today, the launch date of the first commercial Firefox OS phone has been confirmed. The ZTE Open is going to go on sale tomorrow in Spain on Telefonica's Movistar network. It'll cost about 69 euros or around 90 US dollars, which includes a prepaid balance of 30 euros for prepaid customers, plus a 4 gigabyte micro SD card.
Time to freak out because we have some more Prism news. The Washington Post reports that the National Security Agency can track real-time events like sending email, logging in, or out-of-chat services, or even email logins. The information comes from a newly leaked Prism slide. The real-time data collection is raising questions about the level of compliance by companies or whether the government has installed its own hardware to monitor such events.
Yeah, in fact, if you want really good coverage of the Prism stuff, keep subscribed to Security Now with Steve Gibson. They've been doing a great job on that. Microsoft's Xbox Music web client is live. Go to music.xbox.com and you can see it. The web version looks similar to the new app for Windows 8.1, although it has fewer features. Microsoft plans to expand its music service to non-Windows platforms like Android and iOS as well.
Investor Aro Icahn has raised more than the $5 billion he needs to finance a recapitalization of Dell, a plan that he says will be more attractive to shareholders than the $24.4 billion leveraged buyout proposed by CEO Michael Dell and private equity firm Silver Lake Partners. With the July 18th proxy vote on the horizon, Icahn, who's now Dell's second largest shareholder after Dell, Michael Dell himself, has proposed a few different variations of a plan he says will use Dell's existing cash to pay out a special dividend to shareholders, take a portion of the company private, and then leave a portion of it publicly traded.
Kara Swisher from All Things D reports Don Matrick, president of Microsoft's interactive entertainment business and the guy who took all of the Xbox One credit and blame, is leaving Microsoft. Swisher's sources claim Matrick will leave to take a job at Zynga, possibly as CEO.
You know, if you don't have the internet, then you shouldn't use Zynga. Speaking of Icahn, a different one. This one's Icahn, the organization that oversees domain registration. They have approved new rules for domain registrars. When the new rules take effect at a later date, users will need to verify their email address or their phone number, one or the other, within 15 days of applying for a new domain. When registrars sign the new agreement later this year, they will also commit to keeping information about registrants for 2 years after a domain registration is canceled, as well as logging the IP address from which the registration request was made for 180 days.
Remember when HP spent $1.2 billion on Palm and then kind of dismantled that whole OS and the hardware before it ever really got started? Well, the company may be ready to get back into it. CEO Meg Whitman has said that we have to ultimately offer a smartphone, and reports are pointing to Android-based hardware as well. An HP executive from the company's Asia-Pacific division told the Indian Express that it was still in the works and that HP has to be in the game, but didn't give a timetable for any future products.
Get your head in the game, HP. The U.S. Second Circuit of Appeals overturned a lower court decision to grant class action status to the Authors Guild and their lawsuit against Google over the scanning of books. That's a big win for Google. The court also told Judge Denny Chin to rule on whether Google's book scanning is fair use or not.
Intel CEO Brian Krzanich says the company will speed up the introduction of its chips for tablets, phones, and wearable computers. Krzanich and Intel President Renee James both said that wearable devices will become a key battleground for mobile companies. On the Intel television service front, Krzanich proved he isn't crazy by saying Intel is being cautious and careful in the content industry.
All right, before we get into the discussion and introduce our guest, I want to thank our sponsor for today's show, ProXPN. More than ever, your online freedom and privacy are under threat. Governments and ISPs want to control what you can and cannot see while keeping a record of everything you do. I mean, you see about it. We saw it in the news feeds today. There's a story every day about this. Plus, free Wi-Fi at the coffee house. You want to really avoid that. If you're at a hotel, you're at an airport, you're at a coffee shop, if you need to use that Wi-Fi, you're putting yourself at risk because passwords and sensitive data can be intercepted more easily than you might think. That's why you want to use virtual private network. That's why I subscribed to a VPN. In fact, I use a couple of different ones because I want to make sure that I always have access to the internet over that public Wi-Fi, but I want it to be secure. I want it to be unseen. That's why I use ProXPN. ProXPN is a global VPN that works with almost any internet connection, creates a secure encrypted tunnel through which all of your online data passes back and forth. Any online application works with ProXPN, including your web browser, your email, your file sharing, your instant messaging programs. ProXPN keeps everything you do online hidden from prying eyes, disguising your physical location and giving you unfettered access to any website or online service, no matter where you live or travel to. They have a nice selection of different servers to make sure you're like, okay, this one seems to be working better. You can switch to that. 512-bit encryption tunnel protects yourself against ISP six strikes rule, bypasses internet filtering, bypasses geographical restrictions for internet content and online video with worldwide servers in the US, UK, Asia, and more. Windows and Mac, world-class customer support, and the thing that convinced me, Steve Gibson gave it a great review on Security Now. So you know what? You got to protect yourself if you're out and about. Do this now. Go to proxpn.com/twit for more information and to sign up. ProXPN premium accounts are normally $10 a month, $9.95. Not bad. $74.95 for an entire year, but we've got a special offer. You don't even have to pay that much. Use the code TNT and receive 20% off for the lifetime of your account. That's less than $5 a month on the yearly plan. And if you're not satisfied, you can cancel within 7 days for a full refund. So why not? Try it out, proxpn.com/twit. Sign up with the code TNT. We thank ProXPN for their support of Tech News Today. Joining us now to discuss the stories in the news, we're very happy to have back on the show Willie Dills Gregory, co-host of The Instance Podcast and community manager at Podomatic.com. How's it going, Dills?
Hey, it's going great. I'm glad to be back on the show. I'm a return guest.
Yeah, you're regular now, man. You're just, you know, that's in right. The rotation. Good to see you. And I'll be seeing you this weekend, right? At Nerdtacular.
Oh, that's right. Yeah, Nerdtacular. I'm really excited for this year. 2-day event. And there's going to be a lot more going on. I'm going to be running a pool tournament as well. So, Tom, I don't know if you play a little, but you should come out.
I play a little badly, but you found the place for it? You got it going?
Well, there's a little spot. Like, they're not reserving it for us, but I'm just going to go over there and take it over. And we're just going to do our thing. Yeah.
That's the way to do it anyway.
Nerds just take stuff over. That's how we do it.
We rule the earth now. Let's start off with our discussion story about that iWatch trademark in Japan. Sarah, you've been looking into this.
Yeah, Apple is seeking protection for the name iWatch, which is categorized as being for products including a handheld computer or a watch device. This is according to a filing filed on June 3rd with the Japan Patent Office, which was made public last week and written up by Bloomberg this morning. Now, Bloomberg has been pretty sort of all in on this iWatch rumor. Back in February, a few months ago, sources told Bloomberg, and Bloomberg published, that Apple had a team, a real team of about 100 product designers that were working on the iWatch or some sort of wristwatch-like device. At this point, we can either safely say, yes, this iWatch or whatever it ends up being called is a really real thing, or we can perhaps side with Renee Ritchie, who wrote at iMore this morning. It just makes sense for Apple to grab anything they can as far as names go, even just to keep those names out of the hands of other, you know, companies or squatters or competitors. What do we all think about this? Dills? What's your thought? Is the iWatch going to happen or what?
You know, this just, it makes me think of when I was a kid and kids had the calculator watches and stuff. And I don't know if I would like a computer on my wrist. I don't know if I can get behind that. To me, a watch is just kind of a fashion accessory at this point. And, but I get it. I mean, just anything with any word, if you put I in front of it, Apple should just buy the rights to that. So that's a smart thing for them to do, I think. But I will not be buying the iWatch, I don't think.
Didn't Eddie Q say, like, kids these days don't want to wear something on their wrist? They don't see the point of it? So it's not like Apple has been touting watches. I know we've got the rumors out there, but I agree with Renee. Like, they're not going to go out and they're not going to patent things like iTrash Can, although maybe they should for the Mac Pro. But
they should.
But nobody's making the iTrash Can either.
But iWatch seems a logical thing for them to trademark. I think it obviously means they're thinking about it. But it doesn't mean they've got one, like, ready to roll out.
But the concept of putting things in your ears to listen to music all day, that seems like a strange behavior, too. But everyone does it at this point. Like, you know, these little in-ear earbuds or those massive cans that people walk around with. So this idea that kids don't want to wear a watch, that's something Apple will probably turn around and go, oh, yes, this is why you all want to wear this. These devices, when they first started, had to be their own self-contained computers, and that's what made them really lousy. The fact that it looks like Google's working on one that pairs with a phone, as long as it's an accessory to another device, it doesn't have to be as powerful. It can have a longer battery life. And if Apple's going to do it, it's probably going to pair with the iPhone, because nothing right now, the Sony devices don't, the smartwatch. So why not Apple, and why not the iWatch? Because they can't call it anything else. They're going to call it what? iPhone Watch Companion GS3? I mean, that's just silly.
The Apple Time.
You make a good point. You make a good point that if it's a peripheral to my iPhone or my iPad or my computer or my iMac or whatever, all of my stuff can all kind of be controlled from a device on my wrist. I could see that being useful, but again, to me, I don't like wearing watches. I don't like wearing accessories at all.
You're wearing a baseball cap and headphones right now. Are you miserable right now?
This is an accessory? Well, yeah, I don't like to have my head exposed. Yes.
Okay.
But no, I don't know. I just don't like having stuff on my arms and my. To me, I don't know. The Google Glass thing as well. I don't want to have glasses on my face if I don't need them. So it's maybe I'm just not the right guy to talk to, because I think there's a lot of people who still wear watches, right? How many of you guys are wearing a watch right now?
I can't find my one.
I'm not, but I'm not necessarily not going to wear a cool electronic watch of some kind. Not even necessarily Apple's, but the best one. If it's cool enough, I might want to wear it. I think this is sort of, you could sort of liken it to iRadio. We were all calling it iRadio long before it ever got actually announced as iTunes Radio, and maybe Apple knows enough people are already throwing around the term iWatch that even if that's not actually what's happening, it's still worth it for Apple to control that title.
Yeah, I think iOS has probably got the same mindset Apple has right now, which is a watch is a good thing to investigate. We're going to work on one. We're going to try to make it cool enough, but they're not there yet. They're not ready to ship it. So they're at like, let's make sure we've got a name ready in case this works out. But I actually believe Apple's working on it. I just don't know if they'll ever crack it and make something that's worth coming forward with and saying, this is what's going to convince people like Dills and Sarah and myself to wear a cool thing on their wrist.
I mean, Curtis B has the alternative name in the chat room, the iTime. I like iTime better than iWatch.
Ooh. Yeah,
you know what time it is? iTime. It's also time to talk about Firefox OS.
That's like kind of like me time, but iTime. So.
Yeah. iTime, for those who don't really like proper pronouns. Firefox OS smartphone has arrived on Telefonica. You'll be able to buy it in Spain tomorrow. We heard about it in the news fuse. 69 euros. That's around 90 bucks US. They intend to expand to other markets as well. They actually specifically mentioned Colombia and Venezuela. More handsets coming from Telefonica later this year that'll run Firefox OS. They're also, Telefonica, just so you know, in joint marketing with Microsoft to promote Windows Phone. So this is a carrier that really wants to have a wide variety of options. They don't want to get stuck relying on just Android or just Apple. That goes along with that Kantar Group numbers that came out today, pegging Android at 70% of the market in the five biggest European markets. You got more flexibility with Firefox. It's called the Open because Firefox OS is open without restriction. You can modify it. Android is open source at the base, but there are restrictions on what you can do if you want to work with Google on it and call it Android. There's also other carriers coming. Alcatel One Touch Fire is coming out. Deutsche Telekom and Telenor carriers also say they're going to launch phones by the end of the year. Dills, this is a smartphone for the medium market, for developing countries.
Yeah.
But do you think that's a threat to Android? Because Android kind of has that market right now.
Yeah, they do. But this is, to me, this is like, a techie type phone for techie type people. And I don't think it's really going to threaten anybody else necessarily. I mean, if the main selling point is that I can do whatever I want with it, I can mod this thing up, I can get in there and I can mess with the works, then, yeah, there's people who are really going to want to do that. But there's lots of people who don't care. They just want their phone that does the things that got advertised to them, and they'll be fine. So I don't think this threatens anybody, but this is cool. I'm definitely going to check this out. I'm not a super techie person. If this show is called Tech News 2000, I'd be pretty good, but Tech News Today may not be my thing. But I'm still going to be interested in checking this out.
You're a podcaster. You're streaming on a podcast over Skype. I think you're pretty techie compared to the average person.
All right. Compared to my grandma, I'm very techie. But yeah, this phone does interest me. I just don't think any of the other phone companies necessarily have anything to worry about, at least yet. And also, HTML5 is still a little bit funky. There's some things going on with HTML5 that kind of worry me a little bit about what this may or may not be able to do. So we'll see. I want to get my hands on one, though.
I can see the carriers getting behind this, with Telefonica being one of the major ones. And like Tom mentioned, that Microsoft and Telefonica are partnering up because Telefonica doesn't like the Android iOS duopoly. That's what they called it. So I can see the carriers going, yeah, this will be great, but I don't know if people are going to pick up this device. There's nothing really snazzy about them or amazing. They go, oh, I'm going to pick this over an Android phone. They seem like they might be the replacements for the feature phones because they have these little screens. They're made by these somewhat known, well, ZTEs, they make tons of things, but not exactly a huge brand name. If it was an HTC Firefox OS phone, I think people might pay attention to it, or Samsung, actually. But I don't see customers going, yeah, I'm going to go Firefox. It's open. And I'll go with the one that has apps.
Yeah, I think Dills and I are both right. Dills, you're right that nobody who's in the market for an iPhone or a Samsung Galaxy is going to pick the Firefox OS. But I don't think Firefox OS cares at this point. I think iOS has it right. This means the feature phone, and I think that was in the press release today from Telefonica, the feature phone is dead, right? Nobody needs to have a feature phone anymore. Because if you can get a smartphone for 69 euros, that's pretty darn cheap. And that's without a subsidy, right? And that actually includes 30 euro balance on it. So you're really only paying 39 euros for the phone. That's what this is about. This is the battle for the feature phone market that is becoming that mid-range or smartphone market. And I think it's really interesting that Firefox OS is grabbing attention as a brand new operating system, where BlackBerry, which has this huge heritage, just can't seem to make headway. I mean, their earnings, as we talked about last week, were horrible.
Yeah, so BlackBerry's kind of got like a little bit of a stigma attached to it at this point too. It's kind of like the douchebag phone. You know, it's a punchline in jokes about, you know, guys wearing Bluetooth earpieces and stuff like that and rocking their BlackBerries. So, yeah,
that's almost anachronistic.
Yeah, exactly. I used to have a BlackBerry when I worked in sales, obviously, and I really liked the BlackBerry. But you know, you're right. I mean, this is kind of like a midway point between those two things, between having a phone that I don't need to be my stepdad has one of those old guy phones with the big buttons, right?
Oh yeah.
And these are the phones for people who don't care about the smartphone at all, right? They just want a phone that calls their grandkids or whatever it might be. But this phone is kind of like, you're right, it's like kind of the step in between those two things. So
maybe that's cheap. What HP should do. They want to get back into the smartphone race. They want to make the phones, but they want to run Android. They had WebOS. It was perfectly fine. Iaz, what's up with that?
Well, the rumors were Android as their OS because they obviously open-sourced WebOS. But Yam Su Yin, HP Senior Director for Consumer PC and Media Tablets for Asia, long title there, told the Press Trust of India that HP must be in the smartphone game, but would not give a launch date. There's a statement from a representative of HP saying, in the short to medium term, we will remain focused on high-powered computing devices such as workstations to mobile productivity tools such as tablets. In the long term, we will look at the right approaches to enter the smartphone market as well. And Yin said, when HP has a smartphone, it will give a differentiated experience. And HP has obviously talked about smartphones before. Meg Whitman talking in September saying, we're going to have a phone at some point. HP's last phone was in August 2011. That's like a million years ago internet time. Dills, let's design the most amazing phone for HP ever. What would it take for a phone to be in this current market and go, HP's got the best?
I honestly don't know why everybody has to make a smartphone. I don't know why. And I can't even for the life of me figure out what exactly HP's going to do that's going to wow everybody over what everyone else has already. I mean, to me, it just kind of seems like the lines are drawn and your Android, your iOS. Now there's the niche markets who are maybe doing the Windows phone and maybe this new Firefox thing. But I don't see why everybody needs a smartphone.
Well, HP claims that the reason why they're looking at smartphones long term is because to a lot of people, it's the first computing device they'll have. It might be their only computing device.
Sure.
It's not the days of a PC first, laptop second, and then you get a phone. It's, oh, your phone is your PC. So do you think HP, that's their trajectory. But what can they do to make a phone stand out?
I have no idea. Honestly. I mean, point, dip it in gold. Sure, why not? I don't know. I can't even think of what the next thing would be that's going to make this phone so much different, so much more required than the phones that are already out there. And every time they make changes to the existing model, it's small. It's small changes. So unless you're going to come in and revolutionize the whole thing, I don't know if it's gonna stick. Not for me, anyway.
Well, I'll tell you why HP wants to make a phone is because they see the declining market for desktop PCs.
Oh,
and they see the market in smartphones. But I think it might be smarter for them, because you're right, Dills, it's really hard to compete in that space right now. It might be smarter for them to leapfrog into, I don't know, wristwatches or wearable wearable computing or something like that. And maybe they are. I'm sure they are. I'm sure they're at least looking at it. If they were to make a phone, though, I had something you said sort of tripped the trigger for me, which is, what if they said, this is the smartphone that replaces your PC, and like really double down on that? We're the PC company. We're the company that knows a computer. If you get this HP phone, you can plug it into a monitor. It's going to have a USB port, and you can use it as your computer. If they could actually make that promise deliver. Yeah, a lot of people have promised that, but they haven't really delivered.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, you need to really have, full access to all of your files. I mean, there's so much complexity to doing something like that. The device you're actually talking about, you need some sort of a base that maybe has extra memory, or else you're talking about a pretty large device that you're going to be putting in your pocket. I mean, it's just, that's, I think, still a ways away, the device where you can just plug it in. This is my computer. This is the only device I have. Everywhere I go, I have it, and I'm all good. And you need access to your files, a real file management system. Like, there's a lot of things going on in there, and I don't think they're ready to put that out. So
all this sounds like to me is HP buying themselves time by saying vague things like, yes, in the long term, perhaps we'll get into a really oversaturated market that we don't know how to conquer yet.
I think that was the first revision of their first statement. They're like,
if you look at this on the surface, it's like HP saying, yeah, we're sort of the leader in a declining market. We're going to continue to do that until we have to figure something else out. It's like, yes, the next frontier is mobile. HP would probably like to figure out what's the perfect device that we can put together to regain, what market share we've lost.
If they came out with a dockable machine, something that would be like the spiritual successor to the UMPC, something that lets you use your phone as a computer, but also still has that phone interface, that screams Windows Phone, actually, if anything, because that's got that same interface everywhere. If they're going to do Android, that has that strange it doesn't necessarily translate to a larger screen unless you have a like a desktop manager, and that's very different. So it, I don't know how HP can make it very easy to switch from a desktop to a phone and back and forth, because there are a lot of features you don't want on a phone. There are features you want on a desktop, and you don't want to have a giant docking station with like 40 different things coming off of it, even though you can make an Android phone into a PC these days anyway.
I don't know. HP made an iPod back in the day. Maybe they'll just do an HP iPhone. Who knows? Yeah. Right before the show started, I had a little breaking news. Kara Swisher reporting sources saying Don Matrick leaving Microsoft. He was the guy, as we mentioned in the news, Fuzayas, who took all the slings and arrows for the Xbox One announcement.
Yeah, we all got very familiar with Don Matrick. If you hadn't before, he was like the head of the EA for a bunch of years. He was with the company for 25. He took over at Xbox as the head there. And he said that infamous quote about if you want an offline Xbox, you get the Xbox 360, and they reverse course on that. And All Things D is saying that Matrick is leaving the company, and they said, according to multiple sources, close to the situation. So it's not official yet. He'd be leaving for a top job at Zynga, possibly as CEO, and working in close partnership with founder and current CEO Mark Pincus. Pincus has been the CEO since he founded the company years ago. And Matrick was on the list to be the new head of EA. So that's kind of a strange deal. Microsoft does not have a replacement for Matrick, and this could be a part of Microsoft's rumored restructuring because they're supposed to be shifting a lot of things. Rumors of a single Windows division and a single Xbox division, I believe, whatever the other one would be. Dills, if this is true, can Don Matrick help the culture at Zynga?
No. I don't think so. Zynga is this is like out of the frying pan into the fire kind of situation. Really, I mean, maybe he can kind of disappear over at Zynga, but he should really kind of just lay low, I think, for a while. And after the kind of debacle that has been the just the marketing of the Xbox One and their communication with the community that may or may not buy that product. You should not be in the limelight. And I don't know. I mean, didn't they just lay off like 20% of their entire company?
To afford Don Matrick. That must be what it is.
Yeah, okay, sure. So he's soaking up all that 20% of those salary. Okay, sure. That another jerk move, I guess. I don't know. I'm not a big fan of this guy. I think you can tell. So,
well, EA didn't want him to be their head, right? I mean, he was president of Worldwide Studios at EA previously, so it's their own guy. And then he left, and they wouldn't hire. What makes him good enough to run Zynga? Except, well, I don't know. Maybe Zynga has a history of ignoring customer complaints. Maybe that's something that they look at.
Like this guy is the Babe Ruth of that. So let's get him in here. Because he's the best at it.
Maybe it makes sense for Zynga to have somebody who actually has 25 years under his belt at a game company, which is established and has more longevity than Zynga has proven to have. Yeah, I don't know. I'm trying to look on the bright side of this whole thing.
No, that's a very good point, sir. I mean, he does have a pedigree, and sure, maybe he wasn't the right guy for the EA job, but that doesn't mean that they rejected him. Maybe it was a really close decision or something. And Zynga, still more up and coming. They may have a harder time attracting the top talent to this job. Might be a great move for Matrick. But does it mean that he got kicked out?
It looks like Microsoft is just, they don't seem to keep top guys very long. Like Steve Sinofsky was out right after Windows 8 was there. They lost Jay Allard. They've lost so many people that were at the top. Like they were going to be the next CEO eventually. And we know the Xbox division is just gigantic for Microsoft to the point where it sort of eclipses Windows in certain respects. It could be Ballmer freaking out because you've seen how many people have left because of Steve Ballmer. And that restructuring maybe has pushed out Matrick. Although I wouldn't imagine any of the PR hurt him of that nonsense with the Xbox One. Because I don't think Microsoft cares about this little mess that people will forget about in months. But Microsoft's just not hanging on to talent at all.
I think Ballmer said, Matrick, if you don't like the way the Xbox One changes are, maybe you should work for another company.
I'm not going to forget about this guy. I'm sorry. I'm just not. Maybe most of the people will, but it was just like shrugging off your users. You know what I mean? To say, well, yeah, we have the offline version of this. It's the last thing we put out. I mean, that was such a jerk thing to say, and I'm not going to forget it. So maybe everyone else will.
Yeah. We should reemphasize this is a rumor. It's Kara Swisher, All Things D, have a pretty good track record with this sort of thing, but we'll keep an eye and let you know when it's official. Meanwhile, Yahoo killing things is official. Marissa Meyer Taking a little page out of the Larry Page manual, Sarah.
Yeah, on Friday, actually. It was Friday afternoon after the markets closed. Yahoo Executive Vice President of Platforms, Jay Rossiter, announced on Yahoo's Tumblr blog that it would be sunsetting 12 of its services over the coming months. Some were sort of effective immediately. Some are on the near horizon. For example, Yahoo's Axis browser is now dead. That was sort of the alternative browser that was not very old. It was about a year old. Nobody really used it, though, even though people thought it was kind of interesting. AltaVista search engine is officially gone.
Oh, can we just pour a little out for AltaVista?
Do we want to pour a little out for the AV?
Yeah, all right. I think so.
No.
Yeah, you got, I mean, a couple decades of good, clean fun, right? It was just time.
It was my search engine. It was my previous search engine. I switched from AltaVista to Google.
Then you killed it, Tom. It must have been
in 2000. Yeah.
If you'd only seen
I think we can pretty much pinpoint its death to you. Yeah. Foxy Tunes. Did you guys all use the Foxy Tunes plugin at one point?
You always use that, yeah.
I had no idea that was a Yahoo property, but it is, and it's dead. Yeah. Citizen Sports, of course, Yahoo Sports is alive and well. It's a strong property of theirs. Citizen Sports specifically, not for them anymore. Yahoo RSS alerts. It's kind of interesting, and which is timed very well, of course, because this is the day that Google Reader dies as well. Yahoo says, you know, you'd like to follow news, perhaps you'd like to move over to our branding initiative, which is not RSS alerts at all. Although Yahoo did say, you know, kind of bundled in with some of this news that could be taken as, I guess, negative. We have a bunch of services that don't work anymore. They announced that they provided an update to Yahoo Mail, which integrates Flickr with Yahoo Mail a little bit more closely. As to Yahoo Mail users, you could share more Flickr-hosted photos via mail. So that all makes sense. I mean, obviously, Flickr isn't going anywhere. Some of the stuff, you know, if you read the entire list, I mean, some of it I'd never heard of. Yahoo Web Player is not anything I'm too familiar with. Yahoo Neighbors Beta, Yahoo Downloads Beta, Yahoo Stars India. A lot of these probably makes perfect sense. What?
Not Yahoo Stars India.
Exactly.
Just
I know.
When I found out it existed.
Exactly. I don't know. I mean, Dills, do you think that Myers is trimming in all the right places? Do any of these seem like, gosh, it makes Yahoo look like it can't innovate, or is this just par for the course?
I think it's the right time to be getting rid of things that are not getting the traction that maybe they thought at one point they would get. And I think this is a good move for any company, really, is realize that your resources are being allocated to things that just aren't working. And if it's not working, just trim the fat. And none of these things, other than AltaVista going away and making me feel old, none of these things I'm going to miss. I mean, there's not one of these things that I'm looking at going, I can't live without that. You know, if Flickr went away, that would be a big problem. But that's clearly not going away. So all this stuff seems fine. I'm not going to be... My internet life is not going to be any less happy because of these things going away.
But they got rid of Yahoo Internet Life magazine 8 years ago.
Oh, man. You're right. You're right, Tom. I'm now very sad. Thank you for reminding me of that.
I think this is a great thing that Marissa Meyer is doing. I think it shows that she's starting to pull together her vision, whatever it may be.
Sure.
And the fact that at least I am motivated to make fun that some of these things actually still existed, I think means that these are all the right calls. No, I don't think enough people are using any of this stuff. Having AltaVista go away, to me, it's like, oh, come on. Couldn't you just leave it up with a, you know, it already is just a redirect to Yahoo search, essentially. It's just like an internet, you know, I don't know, a milestone or some kind of homage. So that's the only one that makes me sad at all.
Well, that's like I said, it just makes me feel old. It just makes me feel old that something that I used is now gone, you know? It's like it just no longer exists anymore. I was there for its entire lifespan.
I'm a little surprised that Axis is already dead. That only came out last year in May. It was a relatively interesting idea for iOS and Android and had a good plugin, a different way of showing search results, a different way of doing a browser. It just shows that Yahoo maybe doesn't really care about doing a browser at all, even though it looks like Meyer's making Yahoo into a mini Google, the way it's kind of being set up by having Tumblr kind of like an equivalent to Blogger, all these things. Just don't know why they killed their browser of all things, considering it's only a year and a half. The rest of these, though, yeah, AltaVista should be either a redirect or should just say AltaVista powered by Yahoo, powered by Bing. You're right.
Be a monument.
Something like that. Or like here lies the remains of. But the rest of it, couldn't care less about.
All right, let's finish up with an article in Wired today by Marcus Wolinson. I don't know if you guys got a chance to take a look at this. He's talking about a study from a company called Castora that looked at online marketing efforts and the effectiveness of them and found that online retailers acquire customers at 4 times the rate using email than using social networks. They acquire customers 7% of their customers through email. All the stories we hear about, oh, social networking is the wave. That's how people communicate. Email is dead. Email is just legacy, et cetera, et cetera. Facebook barely registers a percentage on the Castora survey, and Twitter, not at all. And it's not that people aren't using Facebook and Twitter. It's that when companies market on Twitter or Facebook, they don't get anybody actually investigating, buying, and consuming their products. The number one way to get people to do stuff is organic search, number one. Number two is email, sending them emails. And usually there's a self-selection bias, right? You've signed up for the email, so you're more likely to like this company's stuff. Number three is cost per click ads. That's what makes Google so rich, the fact that people click on those cost per click ads. So here we're looking at the acquisition numbers. Wolinson points out Google has been doing search ads for 10 years. Email has been around for a lot more, and people have been trying various approaches to that for a lot longer. Is it just that social networks are still young compared to these other methods, and people haven't quite figured out the best way to market on them? Or is it fundamentally different? Is Twitter and Facebook something where you talk to other people directly? You don't want to be marketed to. You don't want to get like a catalog or click and shop from Facebook and Twitter. Dills, if you had to make a stab, what do you think?
I think it's a combination of those things. I do a lot of work with the social networking and stuff at Podomatic, and we definitely noticed that email blasts are very effective in comparison to... I mean, I use our social networks rather than a way to sell products to our customers. I use them as a way to just communicate with our customers, make them feel like they have a line to the company. Selling stuff through Facebook and Twitter really hasn't proven to work in my experience. So none of this is really news to me. We send out email blasts whenever we put out new products and things like that. And those, we know the open rates of those, and they're definitely higher than the number of people who are clicking through and getting stuff through our Facebook and Twitter communications. So, I mean, I think it's a combination. I think it's not just that email is older. More people have email still. Even though someone who uses all of these social networks may think that sounds weird, still more people have just email and nothing else. And yeah, people use Facebook in a different way. Email is something where if I go in, I see a company that I like, that I know sells good stuff, they emailed me something, I'm more likely to click on that and actually make a purchase than I am to go on Facebook and even pay attention to the ads that get run on the right side of my feed. So, yeah, I think it's just a combination of all those things.
Yeah, there's still something about email, and I think this is part of the reason that people complain about email so much, is that you get an email and it's still, in many cases, considered an action item. It's like, yeah. Okay, what do I do now? Oh, I'm supposed to do something here. I've got to respond. I want to read it before I delete. I want to make sure that I understand what's going on here before I move forward. And so... in that way, email is still a reliable way to get attention if you're marketing. On social networks, I do not want to see stuff pinned at the top of any of my streams as far as ads go. But I think that that's inevitable because, yeah, as you said, Tom, social networks are young. There's got to be some monetization. We don't have a really, really clear idea of how that will work well. But companies certainly will try.
Yeah, there's like a mindset you go into when you go into your email inbox. You're like, okay, what do I do with this one? What is this one? What's this one? You're really paying attention to every single word you're seeing. Then you're like, oh, yes, that is a very good deal for bed sheets. Okay, good. That's what ends up happening versus when you're on Facebook, you're like, okay, crap, 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 good. Crap, 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 good. You scan it differently. Yeah. And like Sarah, you're saying, this action element that you have to get to that inbox zero, or you want to make sure that nothing slips through. You want to make sure that you're taking care of all your commitments. And you're more likely to read the real ad. I know with Gmail, I've learned to completely block out in my mind the ad that's on the top. Mm-hmm. But anything I signed up for with any deal site, when I go to my deals folder, I will look at them, or I will see if they somehow get through my filters. I will look at them because you just have the mindset of, ooh, what is this? Oh, that's important. That's not important.
Yeah,
there's a number associated.
Yeah, that's a really good way of putting it is when I see an action item in Twitter, I get annoyed. Like, and don't take this the wrong way, but like when people say like, yeah. you know, send me feedback for the show that's like actionable, like here's a link to put in for the next show, I'm almost like, can you just email that to me? Because I have to remember to bookmark it and pull it out and all of that sort of thing. So I think that is a key difference there. But Dills, you made a great point. It's still good for building the relationship with an audience.
Yeah. No, absolutely. I mean, that's what we use it for. And no, you make a great point, too. You know, the way Twitter handles things like direct messaging and stuff is just not good. If I open it on a web browser and then I open it on my phone, a red message still takes an action to make the little thing go away, you know, the alert. And that just email handles all this stuff very well because it's just this is the way to do it. And, you know, you're right. There's a dwindling number to my email inbox. I have folders where specific things go. Like you said, you have a deals folder, you know, so I have like the instance folder. So I'll go in there and I'll look through emails to the instance and things like that. There's a number that dwindles down, you know, as I actually take care of these things. When I go to look at my Facebook or my Twitter timelines, I may get through 10 things. I may scroll down maybe 10 things deep, but I'm really just checking in every now and then. That's really how I use it. I think a lot of people use it in that way as well. So if you sent that thing, if you put that ad out, and somebody didn't scroll down to it, it's lost forever, you know. So, but an email, everybody has to either say, okay, yes, I'm opening it, or I'm trashing it. And while they do that, they at least see it. So at least whether they actually take an action or not, they've at least seen the name of your company, the name of your product, whatever it might be. So still much more effective than, and we still get, you still get mail in your mailbox too, right? Like actual physical mail, snail mail.
Sometimes,
So, I mean, obviously this stuff still works or else we wouldn't be getting it anymore.
All right, let's fire up the randomizer. Rich Lee, who describes himself as a transhumanist, has done some body modification that includes implanting magnets in his ears and then wearing a coil necklace that allows him to hear in, as if he always has headphones on. So he's hooked it up to his smartphone, and he's like, obviously listening to music is going to be nice, but I want to do some other creative things. I could see myself with GPS on my smartphone to navigate city streets. I plan to hook it up to a directional mic so I can hear conversations across a room. Having a mic hooked up to it and routed through my phone would be handy. You could use it as voice stress analysis. Pre-screen business clients. He'd like to have a Geiger counter on it. He's losing his vision, so he'd like to be able to use it for echolocation. I mean, obviously, this guy is, you know, cutting-edge body mod sort of person. But bravo for him, man, paving the trails, because frankly, not having to wear headphones, if it were some kind of safe, like, earring-level body modification at some point, I'd go for that. Well, Anybody else?
Kudos to this guy for trying to turn into the Batman. This is this is incredible. I watched the whole 10-minute video of how to put it together, looking at how to make a coil necklace and then the schematics to make the amplifier to make this all work. The fact that it even shows people how to do that is even, I think, crazier. It's not just like, oh, yeah, I got this cool thing. It's here, you can make it yourself.
Well, that's the Instructables version that's not involved in the implants, and he used that.
Right.
He followed that Instructables video and then put the magnets actually in his ears, which means he's got to be careful that he's not around any magnets.
MRIs or metal detectors going off constantly.
So what's actually vibrating that's making the sound he's hearing? I'm a little confused as how this physically works. Really?
The coil is the thing that actually has the charge that's causing the magnets to move.
Okay. Wow. That's crazy. this guy's my hero. People stretch their ears and do all kinds of crazy stuff, so there's definitely this could work.
Wait a second. You don't want to wear Google Glass? You want to implant magnets in your head?
No, I don't. I will not stretch my ears.
Okay. But,
people do. People will do this. I will not. I'm still going to wear these headphones.
We call it eye ear.
Magnets. How do they work? Magnets. All right, let's check in on the calendar.
Well, Google Reader officially is shutting down today. You have lots of other options, so I hope no one's really freaking out about this. You got Dig Reader, you got AOL Reader, you got Feedly, to name a few.
Ah, it's a sad show.
I know, right?
That said,
yes.
Goodbye, Google Reader.
All right, I'm not gonna have anything left after I'm done pouring things out. But yeah, if you are listening live or before midnight on July 1st, make sure you pull out your Google Reader RSS export while you still can.
I believe you have 15 more days as well to to download your
to get your data, even though the reader
it will cease to be able to pull things in. But at least what you historically had put together, I think it's another 15 days. Just do it. Just do it now.
I am so impressed by how well Feedly has handled the transition.
No kidding.
Same. I was ready. I was steeled for it to be rocky and suck, and it hasn't. It's kind of amazing. So good on them. Let's see what's incoming.
Incoming message.
We got a message from David. He says, from Show 785 and your piece on the rumored Google game console possibly being developed in light of other rumors about Apple TV becoming more game-focused, is there some connection to the recent iOS 7 announcement? With the upcoming support for third-party game controllers, is this a sign that an updated Apple TV operating system that will hook into a game controller and allow the device with appropriate developers' support to become a real option in the developing low-end game console market? Maybe not, though. Thanks for the show. Helps in my daily commute and keeps me informed. Cheers. Third-party controller support. Apple TV. You could just do a Bluetooth. They had that Bluetooth update that made keyboards work. Why not these controllers?
You going to play games on your Apple TV, Dills?
Yeah, I definitely would. I mean, I probably spend more actual game time on my iPhone and my iPad at this point than I do on my very expensive quad-core i7 gaming laptop, which is kind of sad when I think about it. But if I could take those same games, come home and just grab a controller real quick and finish off wherever I was, on the bus or whatnot, on my TV, that would be fantastic. I would totally do that.
All right, that is it for this episode of Tech News Today. Willie Dills Gregory, thank you so much for joining us. Always great to have you along. TheInstance.net, where he co-hosts with Scott Johnson and Terpster about World of Warcraft, so you don't have to. And, of course, the Torture Cast, if you're a Giants fan. Podomatic stuff. Anything you want to particularly let folks know about?
Well, definitely Podomatic just finally developed for the first time our iOS app. And soon to come, we will have an Android app as well. And, hopefully on more platforms as we can. So check that out. We're in version 1.6 or so. But coming 2.0 and 3.0, there's going to be some things that nobody else has done yet. So really excited about that. If you listen to podcasts, check out podomatic.com and also download the app. It's cool.
Excellent. Thanks, man. Mm-hmm. Also, check out our subreddit, technewstoday.reddit.com. That's where we look to see what you guys are interested in having us talk about. We're going to pay attention to what we think are the best stories of the day from other sources, but we always want to know, like, what are the folks in the subreddit up to? Not only by submitting links, but voting on them, voting them up, voting them down, all that sort of thing. We do take that into account, technewstoday.reddit.com. So if you haven't taken a look at it, go join. Get in on the action. You can find us on the web, twit.tv/TNT. Email us, tnt@twit.tv. And give us a call, leave us a voicemail, 260-TNT Show. Very happy to have Danny Sullivan from Search Engine Land on the show tomorrow. We'll see you then.